Hello, this is Mark Steiner, and welcome back, everybody. Today is the 43rd anniversary of Earth Day. Over the next half hour, we'll hear from three different environmentalists about their reflections on what has changed or not changed over the last 43 years and what still needs to be done. We'll hear from Marty Cobenese of the Indigenous Environmental Network and Drew Schmidt-Perkins, Executive Director of 1,000 Friends of Maryland. But first up, we're about to have a conversation with Mark Hertzgard. His latest book is Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. He's just written an incredibly powerful piece, which we'll be talking about at another date, called What BP Doesn't Want You to Know About the 2010 Gulf Oil Spill. That's in Newsweek. He's environmental correspondent for The Nation, fellow at the New America Foundation, and co-founder of Climate Parents. And Mark, good to talk to you again.
Always good to talk to you, Mark.
So just as we're doing with lots of other folks here today, it's kind of reflecting on these 43 years, on what Earth Day meant in 1970 when William Proxmire and others created this day to kind of expand environmental consciousness. But there's some who would argue while we don't have burning rivers that we have not a lot to celebrate about. Or am I being too pessimistic?
I think there's been progress in these last 43 years, but obviously many of the problems have gotten worse, including above all climate change, which was really not on the radar screen back then. But having said that, I think the basic lesson 43 years later of Earth Day resounds today as well, which is that the way that you get progress on the environment when you're going up against very powerful interests, economic interests, including oil companies, chemical companies, is that you have to put people in the streets. And there were 20 million people who went into the streets on Earth Day, April 22nd, 1970. And that is what led a sitting Republican president by the name of Richard Nixon to calculate that he had to get out in front on the environment issue and take that issue away from the Democratic Party if he wanted to win re-election in 1972. And as a result, Nixon, ironically enough, was the leading force that brought about all of the environmental laws and agencies that we now take for granted here in the United States. The EPA itself,
right?
The White House Council on Environmental Quality, the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, these background and basic landmark environmental laws that, by the way, are still the model for most other countries in the world. That all happened because of Earth Day and the fact that people got into the streets and scared the president that if he didn't do something about it, that issue, that he might risk his reelection. And I think that's the lesson we need to carry around today when we're facing the more urgent problems of climate change and others.
What do you think has happened since, though? I mean, is it that corporate power has gotten that much greater in 43 years? Is it that people have tired of the issue, that it's too hard to put your hands around climate change, that it doesn't kind of grab the human emotion like a burning river does, or as it did back in 1970? I mean, what do you think has changed?
I think you've put your finger on a number of the factors, Mark, but it certainly is true that corporations have much more power and money, and corporate money in particular has much greater and more unfettered influence within American politics than it used to. But, and this may not sit well with some of my friends in the environmental movement, but I think also that the environmental movement has, big parts of the environmental movement have drawn the wrong lessons from the original Earth Day, that they kind of took for granted the political capital that was created by those 20 million people going in the streets and kind of thought that, okay, what we as environmentalists need to do now is go to Congress and go to the president and have the smartest ideas and the shiniest reports, and that they'll just do the right thing environmentally because it's the right thing to do. And that is such a profoundly naive misreading of how politics and fundamentally power works in the United States. And I think that a lot of the problem also can be laid at the doorsteps of some of the mainstream environmental groups who have forgotten their grassroots base and have forgotten that if you want to move decisions in Washington, you've got to be able to reward the politicians who vote the right way and punish those who don't. And that is a well-understood lesson by, believe me, by the polluters, by ExxonMobil and the Peabody Coal and all of the other powers that be, they know that lesson perfectly well. And I think, frankly, that some of the environmental groups have forgotten that.
You know, some people argue that one of the reasons people forget is that sometimes some of the larger groups in this country, because as people get older and groups become more established and they start getting funding from certain sources, people get less active. They become more tied to where their funding's coming from rather than making the battles that have to be made for the Earth in the future.
I think that happens, and also, even more prosaically, people begin to see this issue as a career.
Right.
And they begin to think, you know, okay, I want to keep my program together, and it doesn't really matter that we're not winning as long as we're fighting the good fight. Well, no, that's really not correct. It matters profoundly whether you're winning. And I don't think there's been a lot of accountability for many of the environmental groups. You know, a few years ago, they rolled out their big push in the first year of the Obama administration for a climate legislation called cap and trade.
Right.
And by the time they were done, they had actually set their movement back by backing that particular approach. Now, if that had been done in the private sector, where you had a huge rollout of a big new product that you were very excited about and you'd spent all this money and it ended up in a profound failure, there would be consequences. Those people would be fired and replaced with somebody else. That has not happened in the environmental movement. And I think that the environmental movement on this 43rd anniversary of Earth Day has to take a look at itself, as well as the factors you quite rightly mentioned. I don't want to be misunderstood here. The corporate money is by far the most important influence. But, you know, it's always an uphill struggle when you're doing social change and environmental work. And so it's not enough to just blame the bad guys.
Right.
You also have to be smart about how you fight the bad guys.
And I'm reflecting back on the book that you wrote we talked about in Washington when we were together last, Hot, Living Through the Next 50 Years on Earth. And you lay this out in many ways for your youngest, for your daughter, to think about where the future is going to be. And I think that's something to us really to reflect upon as we look at these 43 years and what comes next.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's an advantage of environmentalists that they do try to convince decision makers to see the long-term picture here. And yet, clearly, you know, the environmental movement has failed in the last 20 years to bring to bear the kind of urgency and solutions that are required. And as a result, as you mentioned, you know, my now 8-year-old daughter, with the rest of what I call Generation Hot, the 2 billion kids on this planet under the age of 25, they're going to spend the rest of their lives dealing with rising temperatures and living under the hottest climate that we've had since we began as a civilization. So, you know, that's unfortunate. It's more than unfortunate. But there is still time for us to make a difference. And that's part of the reason that some of us have formed this group that came out of the book Hot, and it's called Climate Parents. And we're trying to get parents organized to speak out and take action on this. We think that now, at this point in the climate crisis, that whether you like it or not as a parent, caring and acting on climate change is now part of your job description. Just like giving your kids a good education and proper diet and health care and you know, place to live and all of that, you have to now care about climate change because it is that level of threat to their future.
Well, sign me up for Climate Parents.
Shall be done.
And I'm serious.
And I should say, and I don't mean this in any comment on your age, Mr. Steiner, but we also have a grandparents caucus within Climate Parents. Those of us who are a little bit older, we welcome grandparents as well.
Well, I've got both grandchildren and I've got a 15-year-old. So,
well, there you go.
So there you go. So, and we look forward to talking to you later in the week about your piece in Newsweek, What British Petroleum Doesn't Want You to Know About the 2010 Gulf Oil Spill. We'll be linking to that article on our website today so you can read what Mark's been talking about and join us for a discussion with him later in the week. Mark, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me, Mark.
And we continue our conversations on this 43rd anniversary of Earth Day. Drew Schmidt-Perkins is executive director at 1000 Friends of Maryland. She was actually the first guest we ever had on this program talking about the environment in 1993. and was on our program talking about the 25th anniversary several moons ago about Earth Day. And she herself, as a very, very young person, was at the first Earth Day demonstration, or one of them anyway. And Drew Schmidt-Perkins, good to have you with us.
Thank you, and thank you for reminding me all that I've gone through, not how old I am.
You could have started at 10, Drew.
Yes.
And you may have, but I'm curious, because both of us, in terms of your work here as a leading environmental advocate in the state of Maryland, someone who literally took part in a demonstration 40 some years ago, Earth Day, celebrating that. Your immediate reflections on either how far we've come or not, are in 43 years.
Right. I mean, it is completely fascinating to look back and say, "Wow, we've come a long way," and then at the same time, it's yikes, we really have to redouble our efforts. So first, you know, we all think of the first Earth Day with burning rivers and choking air pollution and dead fish and, you know, these real visual problems. And we have largely stopped rivers from catching on fire and major fish kills through really good national legislation like the Clean Air Act and the Safe Drinking Water Act and the Clean Water Act. And now when we look at what we have to do, often the challenges are less visible and less immediate and more, for a few, more debatable. I see also sort of a change in the debate from, you know, it's the economy versus the environment, which happened for so long, that we can't afford this, that you're a jobs killer, or you're all about critters and not people. And I think today the environmental challenges are not couched in such dark things. We're much better at our understanding that the environment and the economy are closely linked and self-support. And we see that by, you know, simply as CEOs will not move to a highly polluted, toxic, ugly area. They move to places which are much more pleasant and sustainable and environmental. And at the same time, we're seeing the new up-and-coming workers, the people who have just graduated from college, the 20-somethings, the 30-somethings, choosing a very different lifestyle that we did, which is much more sustainable. I mean, they're less likely to own a car. Matter of fact, a recent poll found they're more likely to give up their car than their cell phone or computer. They're more likely to take transit, to live in cities. They want diverse lifestyles. They're having less stuff. They're later to buy a house. All those kinds of things are really changing, which is all for the good. But at the same time, our challenges, such as climate change, are so huge and profound that if we do not move very, very rapidly forward, we are really in a deep crisis. So we have a lot of work to do, and with these things being somewhat less visible than a river catching on fire, and more unseen, you know, tiny parts of pollution that we now know are causing huge challenges, something like carbon dioxide causing such a huge problem, it's much tougher to challenge people to say, yeah, we've got to do something. But the good news, again, is that if we do successfully fight climate change, even if you don't believe in it, you will benefit. More energy efficiency saves you money, reduces the use of foreign oil, creates tons of jobs that are local, and keep the money in the community and support small businesses. These are things that everybody can support, whether or not you believe in climate change, if you're a climate denier, or whether you're somebody who really wants to actively work to prevent climate change. So, you know, we're still struggling in many ways, but in many ways we've also moved the agenda significantly forward. Recognizing things like where we live, makes a big difference. Good news is that the next generation wants to live in a more sustainable way. The retiring generation is moving off of the five-acre households and back into cities and towns where they have more options and opportunities and can give up a car, take more transit. So that's all great. But at the same time, we're just now learning that a house out on well and septic systems pollutes 10 times more than a house on water and sewer in town. We didn't really understand that until recently. So for everything that we're moving forward, we're also learning how steep the challenge is as we go forward.
So if you, it's mixed for you where we are and where we have to go, and I think that the role of the corporate world is much different than it was 20 years ago or 40 years ago. It's also kind of quieter, and people have more of a difficult time bringing out the truth. So in this last couple of minutes, Drew, I mean, are you optimistic about where we're going, or are you kind of filled with trepidation, or do you have a sensibility on both sides?
You know, I'm really both. You know, I see so much improvement, so much involvement. I see much of the corporate world really honestly taking on many of these things. The fact that a few climate deniers, just a few, have really held up progress really concerns me, really scares me. And I find it completely unacceptable that a few people who are completely absurd, that they think that the UN is going to take over their town or their house or the United States because of sustainability. I mean, there are people out there saying these things, and they're winning, and they're holding us back from taking action. That, to me, is very, very, very scary. And so we really are asking for the people who do want to find solutions, who are working to be part of the solution, to develop opportunities, to move this agenda forward. We have to be a lot more vocal. We have to actually say to these climate deniers, saying to these people who are these fanatical few, no, that's not okay. That's just goofy. That's silly. You know, go home and let people get to work who really want to figure out how to solve the problems that work for society, for the environment, for the economy, so that we can move forward. But I think we have to step up and sort of take the debate back from them.
Drew Schmidt-Perkins is executive director of 1,000 Friends of Maryland and is all forgiven for outing me for driving an SUV 20 years ago.
Thank you, Drew. And I didn't do that to you today.
I don't drive it anymore. Take care, Drew, and thank you so much.
You're very welcome. It was my pleasure.
We're about to talk to Marty Cobanese. He works with the Indigenous Environmental Network pipeline campaigner from Bemidji, Minnesota. And Marty, welcome back. Good to have you back with us once again.
Thanks for having me on.
So I know you've been fighting hard to stop this pipeline along with many others, and you've been at the forefront of it. And here we are 43 years after Earth Day was declared in 1970. And just curious, really, your reflections on what you think the state of our Earth is. Where do you think we are 43 years after this explosion of environmental consciousness kind of began to grab this nation?
Looking back, I mean, in my lifetime, have we improved the Earth in the 30-some, in those 40 years? Probably. Probably not. there's still lots of destruction going on. We're still abusing Mother Earth. We're still taking and not replenishing, and we're just going on. Oh no, I don't really think that necessarily Earth Day has actually helped us. We've become more aware of it, and I think people have become more aware of it during the day, but they haven't, done it on a daily basis.
How do you feel about the what's your sense and analysis of what the state of our Earth is now? I mean, what danger are we in, and what danger is she at the moment, she being Mother Earth?
I think she's in critical condition. I think there's, we obviously have the climate change, the changing weather patterns. And in northern Minnesota, we had a snowstorm yesterday. You know, the Midwest, you have strange delayed storms. You have the hurricanes. You have the melting ice glaciers. Oh, yeah, I think that the world is in dire crisis right now. And we need, I don't know if we can change anything to actually make it come back right now.
But you, even with that kind of sense that of the danger that the Earth is in and its people, and you think it might, you think it's possible it may be too late to turn it around, but you continue to fight. You continue to be in the midst of a struggle, let's say, whether it's the pipeline or other issues around the Earth. Why is that? Why do you stay so strong with it?
Because I think we still have to try and do something about it. We can't just concede and say it's done. We still need to fight.
I mean, it seems one of the pieces of the when, you know, when we started, when the movement really began in the early 70s, the environmental movement, at least from the part of the white world in America, you know, was built around a lot of animals and rivers, and which is all great. But it seems that one of the things that's happened in the last 40 years has been the reality coming to the fore of the environmental justice movement of communities of color, of Native communities, poor Black communities, Latino communities, poor white communities in Appalachia, who really feel the brunt of this more than almost anybody else do every day. And that's kind of changed, to me, it changed the nature of the movement some. Do you think so?
I think it has. I think there's a lot more reality into it right now of, you know, the economic blackmail that's gone on in those minority communities. People of color. I think people are now just starting to really rise up. You know, back in the day, we had the human rights issues and everything else and those type of marches. And now we're starting to see it. People really stand up for the environment. Obviously, 50,000 people in D.C. You know, the I Don't Know More campaign has been, you know, a huge shot in the arm. And, you know, I think it's time for, I think it's, kind of, that was kind of the rally cry for everybody. And it's not even for the, I think we need to go beyond that now, not only just for the people, but also challenge our tribal, our local, our state, our federal officials to make them not be idle no more and actually stand up and do something. And there are some that are doing that. But for the most part, a lot of them are sitting back and just kind of going, well, we're going to take money and we're going to take what we can as we can right now, instead of standing up and doing something about it.
I mean, one of the things I've noticed, whether it's been the international conferences or actions taking place or in America, is that there's been a change. I think that the indigenous people have been taking a lot of the leadership in this movement. And I don't know how you think about it, but it just seems to me it's kind of changed the nature and tenor. In some ways, the power of the movement. It's a very different spectrum than it used to be.
Yeah, I think that I think it's in the prophecies that have been told to us that we're supposed to take the lead, the seventh fire. But I don't know if we're necessarily in the lead of it for everything else.
The other piece of this I just wanted to kind of have our listeners hear before we end is what is the latest on your work with the pipeline, with the XL pipeline?
Well,
and where are we?
Well, today is the final day. Ironically, on Earth Day, today is the final day for public comments to be submitted to the State Department. So, you know, right now I think the last number I saw was 950,000 comments, with the goal of being a million comments to be submitted to the State Department. So this is a huge issue. I think it's important for all of us to get out and get these last-minute statements in to talk about it. Later on today, I'll be putting out a blog on Daily Cost to talk about the Keystone XL. They did 10 days of different people doing blogs on there. Blogathon. It's important for everyone to stand up and have their voices heard right now. U.S., Canada, it doesn't matter.
Marty, where can people connect to in terms of what you just said, the blog and the website, get information about how to make these contacts on Earth Day for the pipeline? Where do they go?
They can submit their comments to the State Department. There's an online app or online way to do that. Realistically, it's kind of hard to mail it there now since it's the last day. So it's going to have to be online.
Well, we'll push that hard on our program as well. And I just want to say that it's always a great pleasure to have you with us. Marty Cobanez is Indigenous Environmental Network Pipeline Campaigner from Bemidji, Minnesota. Joins us often to talk about the environment and the world we live in. And Marty, thanks so much. Good luck to all of us today on Earth Day. We'll see what happens and how many of these things get into the State Department.
All right, thanks.
Take care, brother. And that's our conversation today about Earth Day 43 years later. And I'd like to thank Mark Hertzgard, Marty Cobanez, and Drew Schmidt-Perkins. The Mark Steiner Show is a production of the Center for Emerging Media. Our producers are Bobby Marvin Holmes, Stephanie Mavronis, and Mark Gunnery. Our theme music is by Wal Matthews of Clean Cuts. For WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community, I'm Mark Steiner. Take care.